University of Colorado.
Welcome to See You on the Air, the University of Colorado's podcast. We feature faculty from across CU's four campuses and their interesting, innovative, and sometimes life-changing work.
Over a third of postdocs have children.
Actual statistic is 43% of women leave science after having their first child. The culture of working long hours, having long incubations, and not having any personal space. Being a mother in science is especially difficult. So I think for us it was important to know that other moms are going through this, to be able to say, hey, is your kid sleeping? My kid isn't sleeping. Is your kid sleeping? Sharing those struggles and saying, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one.
It's a disturbing paradox. While doctors and scientists encourage and promote health benefits of breastfeeding, women are leaving these careers in droves because their environment doesn't often support them. Today on CU on the Air, we're talking with CU School of Medicine researchers and support Michelle Hoffman, Whitney Finney, and Pam Alvarez-Moran about steps they are taking to help retain women in science. After learning that half of women scientists leave their careers after having their first child, they helped initiate the Milk and Cookies program in 2017 through the Women and Gender Center at CU Anschutz. Thank you for being here with us today, ladies.
Thank you.
Obviously, women are concerned about the health of their children, but also their own health, and sometimes that leads them to make hard choices about their careers, particularly careers in science. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those sacrifices that women have to make?
As women scientists, we have a unique set of challenges after we become mothers. So, for example, we work in open lab areas, so we don't have offices. Where I work, it's a BSL-2 area, so I can't even have water. So if I can't have water, why would I have anything my kid wants to eat? We also, because of our day-to-day experiments, we have different incubation times. We can't be available to pump at one time, specifically every day, Monday through Friday. So I think because of the culture of working long hours, having long incubations, and not having any personal space, being a mother in science is especially difficult. And I would say as an early career scientist myself, because we're NIH-funded, for example, I'm a postdoc, it's not a smart financial decision to stay in your job when you have to pay just as much for childcare.
So I myself am not a scientist. I support scientists in research administration. But it's also a problem, I think, institution-wide for women coming back to work and to have to make those types of choices. Some of the particular issues that we had and the reason why Milk and Cookies started was because there was a lack of space of lactation rooms for us to be able to pump on our body's timeline, but also on our work requirements. As a research manager, I do have my own office, but I see the struggles that our professional research associates or assistants, our postdocs, our faculty, like our younger faculty have in finding those spaces. So I think it's an issue for all of us, not just for women and not just for mothers.
So one example I can think of, and one of the reasons that I am involved in Milk and Cookies, is because when I came back to work, there's multiple challenges. There's the logistical challenges of figuring out when to pump, where to pump, how to fit that into my schedule, being a mom, being a scientist, all of those things. But also there's the culture surrounding it, where we're not, I think, doing the best job that we can with supporting moms and saying, this is really hard, let's figure out how to make it work, and let's prioritize your needs because you're the one who's really having the struggle right now, instead of prioritizing like other needs that really are more flexible than a mom's needs returning to work. So I definitely felt that pressure when I came back to work of, do I pump and struggle with this at work and provide the best nutrition and best start for my child? Or do I just give up this struggle because it's too hard and I'm not feeling like I can keep doing this and it's taking too much of a toll. And that just felt like a really unfair choice to have to make. And I didn't want other people to have to make that choice too. I want people to feel supported. And if they choose to not pump, that's totally fine. And we support that too. But it needs to be a real choice, not a forced choice. Like, hey, I'm going to stop doing this just because I personally am going to be better off if I just drop this one thing because I have too much on my plate, versus I can't do this because there are too many barriers getting in my way that people won't help me get around or remove.
And given that women make up about 60% of the faculty here at CU Anschutz and 63% of the employees overall, it's kind of surprising that these issues aren't getting more attention. Do you feel like they're getting the attention they deserve?
I don't think so. I don't think they're getting the attention. I think there is more attention being given, so I think we're moving in the right direction, but I don't think that we're there yet to where we really have a supportive environment as much as we need to. So I think there's a lot of work to do, but I do think that there has been progress. I think it just needs to continue, and more people need to know about it. We need to be talking about it more.
And CU Anschutz does seem to be following the same kind of statistics as, you know, the rest of the nation. So yes, 63% of the total staff on campus are women. But if you look at, if you start with early career investigators, let's say postdocs, 56% of postdocs are women. So we are a majority, and we are a majority of the people going to grad school in the biological sciences. That is really changing. But when you get to full professors on campus, I think the statistic is 32% of full professors are women. So we're seeing that decrease of 40% from starting as some kind of early career postdoc or assistant professors. 57% of assistant professors are women on campus. So you're really seeing that change from early career scientists, I can do this, I'm going to do this, I'm in my early 30s probably, and I can do everything, to 32% of full professors are women. So where is that loss? Where's everyone going? Are people being stay-at-home moms? Are they just leaving STEM? Are they going part-time so they can take their kids to school? So we're still at a loss in that age group.
How do we make that funnel a little more equitable in terms of, you know, a lot are coming in the front end of the funnel and then it significantly narrows? Obviously, the issue that you're dealing with here is an important factor. What else can be done?
I think what we've identified in the couple years when we've really banded together in this group, there's three main parts of supporting women coming back. So lactation support is a big one of those. But another one is paid parental leave, because if we're not providing that time for women and parents to stay home with their children when they're first born, it's really hard to establish lactation. And I want to point out too that the father staying home is also important, because it actually helps women to breastfeed longer and establish that better when they have their partners at home. So it's important for mothers and fathers. I don't want to just focus on moms here, because that is important.
As a father, thank you.
So that's another thing, parental leave, it's enough for breastfeeding to really become established. And then the third part is accessible and affordable childcare. If we can help improve those, then we can really help support women to stay in science, to not drop off like that.
I would also mention that the community that we're trying to build through Milk and Cookies is extremely important in coming back to work. For, I think, most of us, it's super isolating to sit in a makeshift box for, you know, 45 minutes, two times a day, three times a day to pump or to get whatever you need done. So I think for us, it was important to know that other moms are going through this, to be able to say, hey, is your kid sleeping? My kid isn't sleeping. Is your kid sleeping? And really foster the community of, hey, we're available. If you need help, we're here. And that's kind of what Milk and Cookies is.
And we do give props to the University of Colorado for at least making progress in one of the points that Whitney made, which is parental leave. They recently adopted a 4-week paid leave policy for all CU employees, although we should mention that it doesn't include postdocs and students. So we would like to see them being included in that as well, because like Michelle said, a lot of the young postdocs are usually women, and they're the ones that would need the parental leave, as opposed to the older population for faculty, and that is made up of mostly men.
So tell us a little more about the Milk and Cookies program, how it started and what it does.
Milk and Cookies got started when a postdoc, Liz McCullough, and I connected after a parental group. I think it was through the Women in STEM. And after that, we connected that we were both pumping, that we both had young children, and we both were feeling this isolation. And so she had the idea for the name of a group of Milk and Cookies, which was fantastic, and immediately is just like, yes, that's perfect.
Who doesn't like that?
Right? And so right off the bat, we just went ahead and reserved a conference room. It was very informal, like it wasn't through any official channels or anything. We just were getting together and reserved a room and just had amazing response and amazing turnout, and realized that we were not alone in feeling isolated, that there were so many other women who were needing the company, needing that camaraderie, and also needing the space. That was a big thing too, is we reserved this conference room and pumping was welcome. And we had all these pumping mamas sitting around, and we had we would make cookies, lactation cookies. So we'd have those available. And it was just such a shift from this isolating, like kind of depressing, like place of being by yourself and having to struggle to get that space, to this open and welcoming place where we had other moms to talk to. And like Michelle said, just really sharing those struggles and saying, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. So that's how it originally got started, and just really expanded from there as we got a lot more people interested and got different speakers to come in. And that really exploded with having all these amazing speakers. And that, I think, led to a lot of change at the university, because we were able to speak collectively to our needs. And I think that was really heard a lot more than our individual voices were.
We started as a community group, as a support group, and we soon after that became a lactivist group, which is a lactation activist. And I think that that's been the bulk of what our group has been doing now. Like, we're supporting women that are going through this, but then we're also trying to advance lactation policy on campus. We've worked with women that need dependent care during their travel so that they can go to conferences or interviews or whatever ways that they can advance their careers. We've put on pregnancy workshops for women that don't know what they need to do to go on their maternity leave, and when they come back, they're not overwhelmed by all of the administrative tasks that you'll have to do, and all the scheduling. So it's really grown. You can see there's an ebb and flow into lactating women on campus. It's not always a stable amount. I think the World Health Organization, they recommend up to 2 years of breastfeeding. So you can kind of see when people are done pumping, they might stop coming, but there's always new women on campus that need that support.
And is the program exclusive to CU Anschutz?
I think it encompasses mainly our campus, but I mean, if someone wanted to come to it, we would never, and we have dads too. It's not just women who come. So we're really supportive of parenting in general, though majority are women. Through 500 Women Scientists, we've also organized some instructions on if people want to start a Milk and Cookies group on their own campus or workplace, of kind of how to do that and kind of the steps that they can take to get started. You know, I'm hoping that in the future other places will kind of adopt this type of paradigm. It's not a strict paradigm. It's kind of just how to have a community together.
And we should also mention that this also affects students on campus too. Mm-hmm. Whitney herself is a student. She's a grad student, on top of being a mom, on top of being a researcher, and on top of being a volunteer for this group. But we have other students that are part of our group, and they're also really important to this cause, because they don't have a lot of the allowances that an employee like me has. I can take a couple hours of sick time if I need to go and take care of my child. They need to be in mandatory classes, and sometimes that's a harsh reality.
Right. So I think having a lactation policy mm-hmm. will help that, a comprehensive lactation policy that is going to support students and, you know, everyone on campus, no exclusions to anyone. And I think just having, you know, this conversation continue and have breastfeeding normalized and having this to be a normal thing and changing the culture to be one that's supportive of parents and supportive of being a whole person instead of just being like just a scientist, to support scientist parents and, you know, whatever else is important in your life.
And it sounds like it's a really great example of something that started around a single issue. Lactation is really branched out in some important directions without these kind of formal constructs that you often see in a university setting.
Yes, and there I would like to mention there is another milk and cookies group at National Jewish Health just down the road, so where it just happens to be medical campuses right now.
And how many people are involved?
Our listserv right now is about 150 people. Currently lactating on campus, we have 200, and there have been approximately 100 additional women who are aging out of their two-year badge access
and
for lactation.
And we should mention that there are some people that we are not counting because we get our metrics from badge access into lactation rooms, but there are some women on campus that have their own office and they are part of our group. If they would like to join, they're welcome. Everyone is welcome to join our group. It's not exclusive to only the people that use the lactation rooms.
Has the campus been supportive?
Milk and Cookies has been supported by several groups on campus. So we've been supported by the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, the Women and Gender Center, the Office of Equity supports us through the lactation badge access. So I think it's nice that a lot of different entities on campus know about us, but it's difficult because we don't have one central location that we can go to. So that's one thing that we've been working on also as Milk and Cookies, is that we are really advocating for someone like a work-life coordinator on campus who would be where all of this falls, and someone that would know all of the background information about going on leave, lactation, all of it would be one person, as opposed to several different entities on campus that each know a piece of what it's like to be a mom on campus.
In general, a lot of people really love what we're doing and really support us. I think as far as entities or funding and things like that, I think that is a little tougher. I think that we have had some support for sure. I would love to see more support because I think, you know, if people really believe in it, putting their money where their mouth is really an indication of what you support. But I think overall, as far as the people on campus, I think people are definitely supportive of us and what we're doing and our cause and what we're working for.
You would certainly think that an academic medical center like this would be supportive. How do these issues play out in larger society away from a university setting? I'd imagine there are similar issues with different kind of focuses.
I think that like other companies definitely struggle with similar issues of supporting women when they come back to work and in lactation spaces. I think there's a lot of community movement, specifically through some health departments like Tri-County Health Department and Boulder Health Department have breastfeeding initiatives that they have dedicated staff to just really helping workplaces to become more breastfeeding friendly. And actually, I worked a lot with both the Boulder and Tri-County Health Departments to really get some progress going because they have all this experience with workplaces and how to make workplaces more friendly. And they have lots of really creative ideas because there's a lot of places that have unique challenges, like, for example, a restaurant or a job where you're traveling to different sites. So I think there's a lot of expertise out there because of the unique situations here are having students or having people who are working in the lab, like Michelle mentioned, where you have timing issues and you can't, you know, pump in the lab at all because that's not sanitary for your milk. So I think there's a lot of community resources too, which is really exciting. And there's a lot of companies moving towards getting like breastfeeding friendly designations to really support their employees better. So I definitely think we're part of a bigger movement. I think this is definitely a cultural shift that's happening and going forward.
And it's really interesting how there's a mental change after you have to start breastfeeding or pumping. and you become a lot more aware of accessibility issues everywhere you go. If you're at the mall and you notice that there's a lactation space, you'll notice it and you are grateful for it. But if you are going to a work conference and there isn't a lactation space, or there is a lactation space but there's one and it locks and there's 500 people there, and what happens if there's more than one pumping mom and the breaks are at the same time and they're really short? You start noticing all of these obstacles. So I understand why it's a difficult challenge to wrap your mind around until you actually go through it, which is why it's so important to have someone like a work-life balance coordinator that understands those challenges and works to make to get rid of all of those obstacles, instead of asking people that have no idea what you're asking for to make those changes.
We've also had Colorado state legislators come to our meetings, and they're very supportive of our parental leave initiatives as well.
Michelle, you talked about the particular issue of young career scientists. Are there statistics about how many women are leaving the field?
Yes,
because of these issues?
There are lots of statistics about. So the actual statistic is 43% of women leave science after having their first child, but 25% of men also leave, which is way higher than the average. So it's not women specific. That kind of shows that it's field specific, right? How we as scientists use our time, use our resources, is affecting how we parent or if we want to stay at home after having our first child.
Over a third of postdocs have children, and the median age for postdocs and early career investigators is 30 to 34. So if you're looking for sort of the age where scientists start to have children, it overlaps with when you see men and women start leaving the STEM field.
And so how many women and men, come back into the field, and what are some of the barriers to doing that? It seemed like it'd be hard to be out of it for a while and then come back.
Yeah, it's extremely hard. I don't have any statistics on that. I do know that as for myself, I'm an immunologist and I'm a member of the American Association of Immunology here. And what I have been seeing recently are more grants for career reentry. So people are starting to understand that maybe we have to leave for a few years to make sure our kids get off to a good start, but they are thinking about
like a funnel.
Career reentry funnels. Yeah.
Anecdotally, I know that of people I've known who left and stayed at home with their children, when they come back in, they're coming back in at a lower level. So, you're on this career trajectory, and then if you leave and you want to come back, you're having to come back in at a lower level. So say you were a postdoc and you left and didn't finish that, then you might come back in as a research assistant. And getting up from there is a lot harder than if you continued that path.
And science moves so quickly, too. If you are gone in 5 years, there is new technology that you have not even heard about that's out, So there's a lot of catching up to do.
Whitney, you talked about campuses putting their money where their mouth is, and obviously, these issues are important for women and children and fathers as well, but they're probably also important to the bottom line. So CU Boulder contributed to a recent study that found having better breastfeeding options for mothers not only benefited them and their children, but the productivity of the offices overall. So in any organization, if you can point to cost savings, more efficiencies, that would seem like a pretty powerful incentive.
Absolutely. And I think that those benefits and those cost benefits are definitely there from the decreased healthcare costs of baby and mom to increase productivity, like you mentioned, to increase retention, because you're not losing people who are forced to make that choice. So if you provide these great accommodations and someone can come back and say, wow, I can parent the way I want to, I can breastfeed and also continue to work here, then that decreases turnover, which affects the bottom line. I think one of the issues with those numbers and convincing, whoever needs to be convinced that those numbers make sense, is that a lot of those numbers are not hard numbers for some reason. And I think they're very true and they're very valid, just like there's a lot of research in that. But for some reason, there's a bit of a disconnect between saying, hey, look, this is going to decrease costs, and saying like, oh, therefore we should just go ahead and shift this here. There seems to be, you know, we can't just take that from here and put it here. We can't say, oh, if we just save money here, we should put it here. There seems to be, it doesn't seem to be a straight of a path from our experience with talking to different people.
I also just read a statistic that said that it costs about $30,000 to hire a new person on. So if we're talking retention, every time you keep a scientist who's a new mother, you are saving yourself $30,000.
It's a powerful bottom line.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how you all started thinking about careers in science and getting into careers in science. And when you did, was this something on your mind? Or was it only after you got into it?
So I was always interested in science. That was always my favorite subject. So I think it was a pretty clear path for me. Always getting a job at the university working in a lab was just something that was really fun and great. So I was always very enthusiastic and everything. So I would say that challenges of being a mom and being in science were never on my radar at all. Like, it was not something that I thought about. I don't think I heard people talk about it very much, probably because there weren't as many people, as many moms in science, right? So that conversation just leaves the field instead of staying in there. So it was definitely a shock for me when I experienced that. It was not something that I had prepared for or anything like that. So, and like Pam said before, I think it's really hard to know what those challenges will be because we're trained on this mindset of like, come in early, stay late. That's how you'll succeed. Work harder than everybody else. Like, you know, work through your lunch hour, like just this intense just work ethic. And I think that's actually detrimental because then once you become a mom or a parent, you're like, wait, there needs to be balance. And like, I also don't need to, you know, be the one who comes the earliest and stays the latest to be a productive member and be contributing. And also I think a mentality of let's help other people. Like when someone comes back from maternity leave, like, you know, it's okay for me to help them out so they can go pump or something like that. Like, I think that that's a little bit missing, just supporting that and realizing that this is like a valuable contribution as well. Like, it's not just the science, but it's like raising the next generation of scientists and activists and good citizens and all of that. Like, that's an important piece that we need to allow scientists, who some of the scientists are researching that type of thing, right? Like, yeah. Like, especially the School of Public Health, they research a lot of breastfeeding and how that can help public health. And at the same time, we're not culturally supporting that within science.
I've always been just a huge nerd. So I worked in a lab in college and that was it. I was like, I love labs. I love this environment. You definitely do it for the flexibility of schedule. I love going to conferences. I love talking to really smart people. And I've been in immunology ever since. I've never even left immunology. In my opinion, it's the best field out there. And I never even knew this was an issue. I did see my PhD advisor. She had a child while I was a student. So I think that's the first time I realized, wow, she's leaving at 4:55 every day to get her kid at 5. And seeing the struggle that way. But until I was really in it, I didn't know how hard it was. And then once I had my first child, I got kind of pissed off. And that's kind of what led to me finding this group and needing help. And I think the community especially has been really important to me.
And I came about research a little bit differently. I am not a researcher, like I said. I work with research support and finances. And I first encountered research when I was a work student at CU Boulder. I studied economics, and I worked in a research department in their accounting office. And so that was the first time I had exposure to it. And I just, I really love having that support role and supporting my fellow researchers and helping advance science. on this campus, the first time I had exposure to lactation issues was as an administrative assistant, seeing a couple of PRAs pumping in an accessible restroom inside of the lab. And it didn't connect then that it was like, oh, it's because we don't have enough lactation spaces that they have to do this. And that issue really hit me in the face when I came back from maternity leave, and that's how I joined the Milk and Cookies group, because I couldn't find a room to pump.
I feel like we just need to clarify, pumping in a bathroom is not okay, that you're making food for your baby, so it needs to be in a place where you'd be comfortable eating. I just feel like that warrants saying, because I think a lot of well-intentioned people don't understand that, and just having that knowledge can really help to say, if someone comes to you and says, I need a place to pump, don't say the bathroom.
Pumping in a lab is also not okay.
If you wouldn't eat there,
don't
you
pump
shouldn't
there.
Pump there.
Yes.
Fair. It seems like there should be some mechanism for talking about these issues on the front end of people's careers, and I don't know what that might be, but do you have any thoughts about that?
So I think a lot of what we are doing is trying to raise awareness about these issues on the front end of people's careers. For example, doing the pregnancy workshops helps women be aware of what's coming, but you're already pregnant. So it's not like your mentor has talked to you, or somebody who is training you has told you how hard it is to be a mother in science.
I think raising exposure and then removing the stigma and having some sort of, I don't know if a training or just a change in culture to everyone, not just for moms, not just for dads, like people that don't have kids, they also need to know why this is valuable, why this is important. And I think that that's the best way to spread the word instead of targeting specific people that might need the information in the future.
Right. Our mentors need to know how to have this conversation with us, for sure. But I don't know how to make that sort of a nationwide thing. I would also like to mention that paternity leave is important for visibility. I think until men start taking their paternity leave, for example, my husband took his paternity leave with our second kid, but not our first kid. It really changes the visibility of what it's like to have a kid as a scientist and not just as a mother. And I think that's important. And I think that's actually opening people's eyes to, wow, parents are a mom and a dad, and they have the same amount of responsibility. I just went to a talk last Friday, and the speaker, his daycare closed randomly that Friday, and he brought his kids to his talk, and I was amazed. I was like, you are a man giving a talk with your two toddlers just screaming. I loved it. I was so happy.
Normalizing breastfeeding and normalizing pumping is also really important. So that way it's not this secret that you only find out about once you have a baby or have a good friend who has a baby. So we really want spaces like lactation spaces and protected spaces, but we also want people to be able to pump in a meeting, to pump in a seminar, to pump in a class, to breastfeed in all those places too, because that actually helps increase the exposure too and normalizes being a parent and being a student. Like if we can have a culture where someone brings their baby into class and is breastfeeding, because otherwise they would have to miss class or would potentially have to watch it over video, which is not necessarily the same. Like some people really learn from being there, and you can ask questions and be more engaged. So if that becomes normal, then I think this struggle will be a lot less. Like if I see my colleagues bringing their baby and breastfeeding or pumping in a meeting because otherwise they would have to miss it, then that also just helps move this forward and makes other people feel more comfortable doing that. I can't count the number of times I've been in the elevator and someone's like, oh, milk and cookies, what's that? Or asks me about what am I doing? And that those conversations just help to normalize it and give that, you know, keeps us going on the path.
And we should also mention that Colorado state law states that a mother may breastfeed anywhere she has the right to be. So we want that to be the reality.
I think this is a great example of a grassroots effort to address a significant issue. And you've made wonderful progress. And as we talked about, you've taken it in a number of directions. But what do you see ahead? How will this evolve?
I have big dreams for this. So I would love to see the lactation and parenting advocate on campus as a full-time employee to handle a lot of the work that we're doing on a volunteer basis, in addition to being scientists, being parents, like all of these things we're juggling at the same time. We need someone to support us whose job it is to do those things.
What we're doing is someone's full-time job.
So I think we have a lot of potential to like continue to grow and have all sorts of resources available, like the pregnancy workshop and more lactation rooms, and just really expanding that to having hospital grade pumps there so that women coming back can actually not just feel like they can do it, like barely, like, okay, I can sort of do it, but to feel like, wow, this is so cool. Like, there's snacks in this room. Their pump is amazing. Like, someone is making sure they're checking in on me to make sure I'm doing okay, that I have everything I need. And just to, you know, they're trying to make sure if I need to take a day off a week, if I need to come back part-time, that I'm fully supported in that. Like, just so women coming back can feel this, like, sense of just kind of mothering the mother. Like, let's just do that a little more. So I have big hopes for where this will go, and it's going in the right direction, so I'm excited.
I would love to keep advocating for on-campus childcare or any childcare really related to CU Anschutz. I just got an email this summer, I think, that my 2.5-year-old was off the wait list for the on-campus childcare, and I was like, she's 2.5. They're like, do you still need it? I was like, no, I have found other arrangements. But I would really love to see some backup childcare, especially for those days when you have to give a talk and you're dragging your kids in to watch your scientific talk. So those kinds of things are really, really important to me, as well as the dependent care grant so that if you are a scientist parent and you need to go to a conference to further your career, to network, to become an assistant professor, you can do it regardless of whether that looks like taking your kids with you or bringing your mom with you to watch your kids or taking your kids to their grandparents' house. So that is really important to me, and having the campus support this initiative and fund this initiative is really, really important to me.
Because that's equity. Like, having an even playing field for a parent to go to a conference as a non-parent, that's equity. Because a parent without support is going to have to spend hundreds of dollars potentially to arrange for childcare or whatever that
or
looks like.
Or just doesn't go.
Right? Or doesn't go. And then that causes them to not, you know, progress further. So that's what it looks like. It's supporting to make it the same for everyone, so mm-hmm. that everyone has the same access to get to those career development opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Well, Whitney Finney, Michelle Hoffman, and Pam Alvarez-Moran, we appreciate you being here today and applaud not only the practical work you're doing to support women on the campus and mothers, but also how you're thinking big about these issues. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having us.
The University of Colorado comprises 4 campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConnellog, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.